south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Now, you longtime listeners have heard me say over and over again that I've had Montezuma's revenge, or an attack of such, in at least 10 years, probably more. And I attribute that to the fact that when I'm out at a restaurant or somebody's house, I don't eat salads, I don't order anything with ice cubes in it, and I don't eat any street food. And what's the definition of street food? Well, those are the little food stands and food carts you see set up everywhere. And I mean everywhere. Sometimes you'll see a half dozen of them on a single block. And if you notice closely, you'll see none of them have a connected water supply. So they have a couple of buckets and are always recycling the water. Yuck. That gives you an idea of how sanitary those little food setups are. So anyway, I'm still holding to that record of not having Montezuma's Revenge or anything like it for at least 10 years. For all I know, I've got the world's record for gringos continuously living in Latin America without Montezuma's Revenge. That is, if anyone's keeping track. I mean, there are nuttier things on the internet, right? Actually, you know, I think Montezuma's Revenge is a bad handle for it. I think it should be called Backpacker's Revenge, because it seems every single backpacker will tell you it's an occupational hazard. They get it all the time, as if it's normal. Well, to them it is. But really, it's not. How could it be? Now, obviously, if you've got a good hygienic technique, you could eat salads all day long if you prepare them yourself at home. After all, when people talk about Montezuma's Revenge, many times you could trace it right back to a salad or some kind of dish that's cooled and has been sitting on a counter a long time. For that matter, if you make your own ice, you can use ice to your heart's content. But the problem is, here in Latin America, well, let's just say in most cases you don't want to know how the ice is made or how they store it. But then again, that's true for many restaurants and hotels up in the States, too. Just read a kind of a sickening article about that recently. Oh, and another thing. People ask me all the time, do I drink bottled water in Latin America? Why, sure I do. The bottled water I make with my own purifier. And I almost always have a bottle of pure water, the stuff that I made up myself, in a glass bottle in the back seat of my car. Oh, and I've tried those stainless steel bottles that some joggers and fitness guys use. To me, they've got kind of an aftertaste, so I quit using them. Glass, I've found, is the only way to go, for me anyway. Now, as far as drinking bottled water that I haven't made up myself, yes, I'll drink it sometimes, but only if I run out of my own water. Look, it's like anything. I haven't had a hamburger or a hot dog at a fast food joint in 30 years. But when someone invites me to a backyard barbecue and all they've got is hamburgers and hot dogs, I will eat a hamburger. Never a hot dog. Hey, I'm not going to be the inflexible anal a-hole at the party who says, I don't eat that crap, don't you have any tofu burgers? Oh, and by the way, I think people who eat tofu and veggie burgers, things that look like real hamburgers and hot dogs, whatever, they've got some kind of mental problem too. Why do you have to make some kind of textured protein look like a hamburger? Just the thought of it kind of kills the appetite, you know? Not to mention, they never talk about the processing at the plant that goes into making a plant substance look like a hot dog or a hamburger. There's something really unnatural about that. Maybe that's why people who eat those things don't talk about it. Yep, no doubt about it, there are a lot of vegan and veggie food snobs out there. Anyway, when I'm traveling on the road, I always have my little mini water purifier with me, so I'm always ready. All I have to do is run back to my room and make up a bottle or two, and I'm set again. But one of the problems with that is, when you're traveling, you don't want to take glass with you everywhere. Of course, you know by now, water is best transported and stored in glass. Fact is, I used to use those glass Snapple bottles all the time and refill them with water. Till one leaked and saturated my luggage, and after that I had to think of a new option. Now, I know there's lots of plastic bottles out there, but I still don't trust any kind of plastic, even if they say, oh, don't worry, they're non-BPA, bisphenol A. Well, you know, it doesn't matter to me. I don't trust them because I know any plastic bottle, when exposed to sunlight or when it gets warm, is going to leach out some micromolecules of plastic into the water. That's true of any kind of drink you have in a plastic bottle. Like, for example, Gatorade. And its cheaper competitor, Powerade, which I also consider sort of a toxin. Did you ever read the ingredients on a Gatorade or Powerade bottle? Yep, like my mother used to say, if you can't pronounce the ingredients and or it has high fructose corn syrup, don't drink or eat it. She also would say if a chemical in a food did not exist naturally, in other words, it was a synthesized chemical that's now used throughout the food industry, it's something your body looks at as foreign. So if you introduce a chemical into your body that didn't exist in nature before, till some dickhead, I mean egghead at DuPont or Monsanto synthesized it, then how's your body supposed to know how to break it down and what to do with the thing? More disgusting yet is a study published in the Journal of Environmental Pollution indicating that plastic water bottles continuously leach chemicals when stored at any temperature that's higher than room temperature. So think about that next time you get back in your hot car and look at that water or Gatorade bottle rolling around on the floor. Worse yet, we've got that big study coming out of the State University of New York where they found that 93% of all bottled water samples in plastic bottles have dissolved detectable microplastics floating around in the water. In fact, that study, released just in March, so pissed off the bottled water industry, they retaliated with a huge publicity campaign. The main drive and point they're making is, as you may have figured, that there is no scientific consensus on the testing methodology or the potential health impacts of microplastic particles in water. So they're saying it's all right that practically all living organisms are loaded up with microscopic plastic bits. I'm okay with that. How about you? Yeah, right. Man, we are f***ed. Reminds me of the old Philip Morris campaigns where doctors were smoking cigarettes and saying they were good for your health. Meanwhile, the Bottled Water Association also says the study's findings do nothing more than unnecessarily scare consumers. Meanwhile, every single human tested has levels of microplastics throughout their bodies. It's even found throughout mother's breast milk. But worst of all is putting plastic food containers in a microwave oven. That's the absolute worst thing you can do. And just think about the millions of people every day who buy those little prepackaged ramen soup cups made mostly out of styrofoam-type plastic. Now, that stuff's known to really outgas when you heat it up. But what can you do when the world's addicted to that stuff and it's dirt cheap? Not to mention when you read the ingredient list, it's like downing a Gilbert chemistry set. Wow, I guess I'm showing my age there. You remember Gilbert chemistry sets? I had one. Did you? I'm sure they don't sell them anymore. Way too dangerous for those plastic little minds. Plastic minds. Pun intended? Maybe. Now, down here in Latin America, most everyone has a microwave, even some of the poorest of indigenous folks. That's one of the main appliances they have. TV, refrigerator, microwave. Oh, and in every room, there's a Stark Bear Curly Q fluorescent light bulb. You can count on that. Man, do those things give off some awful light. I don't know how people stand it. But man, I'll tell you, awful Curly Q fluorescent bulbs have invaded Latin America. Even in the houses of the upper middle class and very wealthy. Lots of Stark fluorescent bulbs just screwed into sockets there, too. Man, I'll tell you, down here in Latin America, money certainly goes hand in hand with bad taste. It's as if most wealthy families here went to the Graceland School of Interior Design. You know, hunk-a-hunk burning love and all that. Anyway, every single time I've been invited to dinner at a Latin American's house, whether rich or poor, they're nuking foods in plastic. And worse, you see them nuking infant formula in plastic, too. And you want to say something. But you just don't. They wouldn't know what the hell you're talking about anyway. Chemistry lesson, anyone? No way. The fact is, it doesn't matter if your plastic dinnerware or cookware says microwave safe. The only thing that really means is that the container won't melt in the microwave. It's got nothing to do with what's happening at the microscopic level where the food in the container is touching the plastic. In fact, I just got done reading a study that said it's not recommended at all to even put your plastic food or drink containers in the dishwasher because the detergents and the heat degrade the outer surface where the food touches the container microscopically, causing a huge increase in the surface area where the food touches the plastic. Picture a very smooth surface like a glass tabletop versus the rough and bumpy surface of a dish towel. That's pretty much what happens at the microscopic level when you put plastic containers through a dishwasher a number of times. Worse yet, I just read a study that said every fish that's been tested has microplastic particles throughout its tissue. Man, what a revolting development, huh? Oh, and by the way, when you buy bottled water, which almost always comes in plastic, right? When you're done, where do you think it goes? In a landfill or sometimes in the ocean? Somehow, the whole idea doesn't make sense. You're drinking bottled water because you're aware that tap water is not that pure. So you're drinking it to stay healthy or get healthier. And then the bottle ends up in a landfill or in the ocean somewhere, leaching plastic into the environment and eventually into animal tissues. By the way, it's never recommended to refill empty bottled water containers made of plastic because plastic ages. You ever look at worn plastic bowls or Tupperware? Have a look at some older worn plastic plates and cups. They look discolored, aged. That means the protective barrier, the part of the plastic that touches the food, well, in theory, there's supposed to be a protective barrier anyway. That's what plastic container manufacturers try to infer. The problem is, the more you refill or wash a plastic material, it's continuously developing micro-etching or micro-scratches. Kind of like how my voice is pooping out right now. Got a cold, you know. So then, what are you supposed to do? Well, you use stainless steel and glass, right? That's a good start. Except, almost all houses these days in the first and third world, they're plumbed with PVC plastic pipe. It's bad enough running cold water through them, but now imagine the hot water lines in your house, always heating up the pipe. And the warmer the pipe, the more micro-leaching. Now, if you have a good water filtration system with a ceramic filter, that'll get out most of the plastic. But the plastic that's dissolved on the molecular level, the only way to filter that stuff out is with a carbon black filter or reverse osmosis. Of course, RO works, but for me, it's too complicated for the average person. Lots of things to go wrong, lots of replacement parts. It's much cheaper and much less complicated to just use a very nice carbon black filter. That's the stage of a good filter that pulls out the organic contaminations, and plastics are organics. And the definition of organic is a molecule that's based on the carbon atom. And that's what activated charcoal and carbon black filters do. They pull out the organics. So if you're using water filters, and you really should, make sure it's got a stage with an activated charcoal or a carbon black filter, with the carbon black filter being better than the equivalent activated charcoal filter. Now, if you set up an under-the-counter water filter, your final stage will be the carbon black filter. They only cost around $10 or so on Amazon and should last a family of four or around 6 months or so. Now, almost all city water in the world is chlorinated, and your carbon black filter will pull the chlorine right out. And that's also a way you can tell when your carbon filter is getting depleted. You'll start getting the taste and smell of the chlorine again. That means replace the filter. Oh, and I forgot to mention, when talking about BPA, that's bisphenol A, found in the so-called bad plastics they no longer put in water bottles. Turns out, it's an endocrine mimicking agent that drastically lowers the sperm count in males. Personally, I'm all for it when applied to politicians. Well, the fact is, you'll find it turns up in most canned products, too. Because, whether you know it or not, every can has a thin plastic lining, so the food in the can doesn't actually touch pure metal. Instead, it's in contact with a very thin plastic layer. And in many cases, it's BPA plastic. But you'll never know because it's not mentioned on the label. Now, I started out this little rant today talking about Montezuma's Revenge and how I almost never get it. But still, once or twice a year, I'll get a head cold. And some of you have probably figured out already by the quality of my voice today that I'm doing this show with a head cold and a sore throat. Luckily, these things only last a day or two for me. So what do I do when I have a cold? I don't take anything, I just ride it out. Well, I shouldn't say I don't take anything. I take my usual daily quota of vitamins and supplements. The short list being vitamin C, curcumin, cayenne pepper capsules, coenzyme Q10, resveratrol, selenium, vitamin B and D and zinc, magnesium citrate, and a few others. And sometimes, you know, when I look at the counter and see all the junk that I'm taking, which doesn't include any prescription garbage at all, I think to myself, people who see this must think I'm nuts. Or really a sick bastard. Well, I may be a little nuts, but I'm not sick. Not in the conventional sense, anyway. Of course, that's my opinion, and I could be wrong. Though, you know, oddly enough, something really bugs me about vitamins and supplements. They all, or at least 95% of them, come in plastic bottles. And somehow, that doesn't make sense. Not to mention, you see this all the time, little kids sucking on plastic toys and pacifiers 24/7. Oh, but they're labeled non-BPA, right? Yeah, right. Oh, and let's not forget the sealants and the white resin fillings in everyone's teeth. Remember, that stuff's plastic and it's bathed in your slightly acidic saliva 24/7. Now, why isn't anyone but me talking about it? Oh, and about saliva, isn't it funny? Everyone else's saliva is gross, yeah. But yours is A-OK. Never could quite wrap my mind around that one. Ain't humans weird? Oh, and did I mention regarding colds and flu, I've never taken a flu shot and never will. And you know, the funny thing is, when I first got here to Latin America some 30 years ago now, no one had ever even heard of a flu shot. And now, hey, thanks to the gringos and expats who demand such things, doctors' offices here in Latin America are starting to offer flu shots too. Yeah, it's what you might call part of the gringo disadvantage. And with that, you can only come to the conclusion that gringos have been brainwashed by Big Pharma. I mean, look, for the past 10 years or so, you've had every third commercial on TV about some prescription drug that's supposed to help or cure some particular disease that wasn't even on the radar when you were a kid. Meanwhile, here in Latin America, when you watch TV, you'll see no ads for prescription drugs at all. Which brings me back to that 100% American joke that Latinos don't get because it's just not in their cultural sphere. It goes like this. What's the difference between a doctor and God? Answer, God doesn't think he's a doctor. Not that funny. More sad than funny, huh? And since we're talking about health and healthcare here, here's an email from Rex. He says, hey, Johnny, Rex here, with a kind of interesting update. After listening to your podcast about stem cells, I made an appointment at the Dream Clinic in Puerto Vallarta for an IV of 3 million cells. They started out with a blood panel, a 4-page blood test. It showed something rather off with my kidneys. They recommended a sonogram. I did it, and it cost $70, which is incredible itself. The results said I had cysts on my kidneys, and they recommended when I got back to the States to see a specialist. So back in the States, I had another sonogram and a CAT scan. Lots of time and lots of stress later, they phoned yesterday with results. Surprise, benign cysts. What a relief. However, as for the stem cells, after 5 weeks and 10 grand, I feel exactly the same. Though, still hanging in there hoping for some improvements with some of my ailments. Actually hoping to become Superman, but so far, no. One last thing, Johnny. In my somewhat wayward youth, I was into fighting chickens. About 3 months ago in a podcast, you said you had a great chicken fighting story that you'd tell next time. Still waiting for that one, Johnny. Signed, Rex. Okay, Rex, about the stem cell thing? I say hang in there, give it a little more time, and then report back. Maybe in another month or two, let us know how you're doing. Like anything, results are highly variable. And Rex, you know, you said you were hoping for improvements with some of your ailments. What ailments are they? You didn't tell us. Because, you know, stem cells are good for a lot of things and really are showing tremendous results for arthritis, skeletal muscular injuries, ligament and cartilage tears, heart muscle problems, etc., etc. And that's why so many professional athletes are getting it done these days. So anyway, do keep us posted and look on the bright side. You could go to an emergency room in the States and drop 10 grand in one day. In my mind, if I had an ailment that required some kind of surgery, or, for example, hip or joint replacement, there's no doubt I'd beg, borrow, and steal to get to 10 grand and try the stem cells first. Because once you've gone under the knife for something like that, man, it's irreversible. And that's why it always blows my mind when people say, yeah, Johnny, that stem cell thing looks awful good, but my insurance won't cover it. Yeah, but they'll cover a $30,000 hip replacement. And that's no insignificant surgery. And I'll tell you what, if you want to get dissuaded from that kind of surgery, just go on YouTube and watch how the surgeon does it. That, as opposed to an IV drip of stem cells, that's a no-brainer on top of a no-brainer. And if it doesn't work for some reason, you can always go for the surgery. And I'll leave it at that, except to say, Rex, it slipped my mind about telling that fighting chicken story. Actually, it's cockfights. All right, so here it is. About a year ago, I met this young lady, MD. She's around 27 years old. Graduated top of her class, has a bunch of medical professionals on her mother's side, and I met some of those family members, including her mom, a couple of times, but she never did talk about her father. She said her parents split up many years ago, and her dad lives way out in the boonies somewhere, and one day, she said out of the blue, was her dad's 50th birthday, and she was going to go out and visit him for a couple of days. So she hopped on a bus, and 3 or 4 hours later, she was in this little town in the boonies, hanging with her dad, the guy she rarely saw, but was responsible for sending her to private school all her life and footing the bill for her private medical school education. And though here in Latin America it's mighty cheap compared to medical school up in the States, it's still, comparatively adjusted for Latin American salaries, a big hit. So anyway, while she's up visiting Daddy, she took a little video of his place and sent it to me. First, there was a scene of the backyard, big, wide-open backyard. I mean, we're talking about out in the boonies now. With, oddly enough, around 10 or 15 very strange structures. They look like nose cones from a rocket on stilts, all of them painted a different color. each around 10 foot tall and 6 feet wide, spaced around 20 feet from each other. Now, in that little video, I only saw those things for a very short time. It seems like she was panning the countryside and caught those things for 3 or 4 seconds. And a couple days later, when she got back, I said, what were those things? Well, she hemmed and she hawed, and she really wasn't forthcoming at all. She just said, it's part of my father's job. And I said, which is? And finally she said, my father happens to be the country's champion cock trainer, breeder, and caretaker of prized birds. She said, he works for this big, rich finca owner whose stable of cocks are always the big money winners. Then naturally I said, is that legal? She said, sorta, kinda. The real revelation being that her dad is this famous cockfight trainer who put his daughter through medical school on the profits and proceeds of cockfights. And when she was telling me that story, I could understand perfectly why her dad's name was never mentioned around the house. Not with all those professionals on her mother's side of the family, anyway. It's obvious he was treated as kind of the trailer trash of the family. You know, you can't imagine anything like that ever happening up in the first world. So, Harry, what's your dad do? Oh, he's a professional cock breeder. You don't hear that one often. So anyway, Rex, that's part one of the cockfight story. I'll tell the rest of it, part two, in an upcoming show, so stay tuned for that. All right, shifting gears a bit. You've heard me say so many times that the more the gringos pile in, the more the place becomes a tourist trap. The more the locals catch on to the fact that you have money, the more gringos start demanding gringo products. Then soon enough, there goes the gringo advantage, price-wise anyway. In fact, you heard early in the show, I mentioned the flu shots, which never existed before here in Latin America till the gringos start coming in. As a matter of fact, you know who I think needs about 100 flu shots at once? Bill Gates. Wouldn't that be fun to watch, put it up on YouTube, hog-tying Bill Gates and shooting him up with a nice big batch of his own medicine? But I digress. We're talking about gringos ruining a good thing here in Latin America, which is why I stay almost exclusively off the gringo tourist trail. Though that's not to say I'm not near the trail once in a while, or I don't take advantage of one of those cheap, all-inclusive package deals to a tourist town like Playa del Carmen or Panama. Which brings us full circle to this email. It's from Dave. Yes, yet another Dave. I got so many Daves listening, I can't keep track of them. He says, hi, John. Just returned yesterday from a week in Panama City, Panama, and I couldn't help thinking about you the whole time I was there. Fact is, Panama's gotten ridiculous. It's way beyond gringo pricing. I can vouch for the fact there are dozens of high-rise apartment buildings going up all over the city, ranging in price from $450,000 to $600,000 and beyond. My God, who can afford that in a place where the average wages are around $600 a month? Well, Johnny, I just wanted to let you know about that and to let you know that I'm hooked on your podcast and listen to each one numerous times to absorb as much as I can. I wish I could afford to attend your Expat Insider get-together seminar, but at this time, it's not possible. Sometime in the future, though, for sure. Oh, and Johnny, I'd like to make one little observation. Did anyone ever tell you that you sound a lot like the late, great Casey Kasem? Warm regards, David. Well, Dave, thanks for that. And yes, people have said I sound like the late, great Casey Kasem. I only hope I don't look like him. He's one of the reasons someone coined that phrase, he's got a perfect face for radio. But he really was a great personality and great announcer. Though I may be wrong and it sounds very un-PC, I'd like to think I'm slightly better looking than old Case. All right, now, keeping with the healthcare theme, here's an interesting email. It's from Pam. She says, hi, Johnny. I really enjoy your show, and here's my situation. I had inflammation in my brain and a bad one-week-long migraine recently. Oddly enough, it got much better and actually went away when I started taking organic decaf green tea every morning. But Johnny, you have to get tea with no aluminum in it, because as you know, aluminum is a neurotoxin. All right, meet Johnny here. Let's stop for a second. Pam, you're absolutely right. Aluminum is a neurotoxin. It does not belong in the human body, yet they find it in the brains of Alzheimer's patients. So then, where's it coming from? Well, it's everywhere. But you see, it's only been used and processed by humans for the last 150 years. Before that, almost nothing contained aluminum except, you know, the raw earth and the soil and such. In fact, until the year 1855, when they found a better way to process it, it was more expensive than gold. In fact, pre-1855, Napoleon III had dinnerware made out of aluminum, forks, knives, plates, and all that. Why? Because they were a strange, odd rarity. Strong and so very light, yet more expensive than gold. So then why do you think forks and knives are still called silverware? Because for hundreds of years, they were made out of silver, 92% silver, and 7.5% copper. It's just too bad that back then there was really no reliable scientific data on Alzheimer's. But today we know that every Alzheimer patient has a high level of aluminum in his brain. And it seems most everything these days has aluminum in it, even things we eat. Anyway, Pam, in her email, talks about the benefits of green tea, saying you have to get the tea with no aluminum in it. Well, I could be wrong, but I'm not expecting aluminum to be in my green tea. Are you saying there are brands of green tea that actually say on the label, aluminum-free, or as the Brits would say, aluminium-free? Well, I guess you learn something new every day. Then Pam says in her email, Johnny, I want to go to Southwest Portugal again and see if I want to get a place there permanently. But as for now, I'm trying to pack up and sell my place in Newark, New Jersey, and get a place in North Central Florida. It's true, she says, packing and selling your stuff is the longest and hardest thing you'll have to do. But I do want out of here now. In any case, Johnny, thanks for all your info and humorous show. Signed, Pam, from New Jersey. By the way, you know, when you're down here in Latin America, when people talk about cities and states in the United States, anything that's got a new in its name, they pronounce nueva. So Latinos will say Nueva York, Nueva Jersey, Nueva Mexico, Nueva Brunswick, etc. Anyway, as far as Pam saying she'd like to move to Southwest Portugal, hey, I know it well. It's called the Algarve. It is very nice and inexpensive for Europe, but still twice as expensive or more than in Latin America off the tourist trail. Oh, and by the way, as far as having a plan B in Europe, personally, I think it's a bad idea. For one thing, they've got a Muslim invasion going on there. And secondly, if there's one place the nuclear bombs are going to fly first, it'll be in Arab-Israeli territory. So if you're anywhere in Europe, you're at risk. Because really, most everything is strategic in Europe. Whereas there's only one particular place in Latin America that's strategic, and that's the Panama Canal. And the rest of Latin America? Nobody really gives a shit. And for your plan B, that's a very good thing. All right, one last thing. Remember, you can still sign up for my January 2020 Expat Insider Seminar. Just go to theexpatfiles.com and click on Johnny's seminar link. Once there, you'll get the full details and sign-up info, plus the information on how to kill two birds with one stone, that is, come to the seminar and apply for your Guatemalan residency at the same time. Quite a few people have done that, you know. And you can too, but the window of opportunity is closing. So it's time to get cracking. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.